The first 2 weeks of the 2025-26 season are officially behind us, and while Philly's Tyrese Maxey and OKC's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander managed to take home Conference Player of the Week honors in the East and West respectively, only one team enters the week unbeaten, as a trio of squads would get knocked off for the first time this season. Well, they'll now go back to the drawing board to get things right in the days and hours to come. What's happening, everyone, and welcome to the new 24, the Ron Artest episode, as this marks number 37 for all our devoted listeners keeping up with us, as we thank you once again for taking time to hear all of our thoughts regarding all the latest to take shape around the NBA. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and I'm joined as always alongside my friend and co-host, Torrance Stagger. What's up, man?
Doing good, doing great. Episode 37, very excited for it. And as you said, you a long-time listener keeping up with us, send us an email at tntfpod@gmail.com. Check out some of the things we dropped during the summer. We got Faces of the League series, which was pretty dope. 30 teams in 24 days. If you still want to get a preview of your team's season, and our show Second Chance Points, we dropped a few episodes. The Decision from LeBron James 15 years later, some Team USA, a lot of things, man. TNTF.
Yeah, definitely want to follow that. Make sure to hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at TNTF_. If you like what you hear, to get all you need as it pertains to giving news and information regarding the show. And as always, we're going to cut straight to the chase on the new 24 and open up things by discussing some of the top talent that hailed from the 2023 draft class after hearing us talk on the current crop of rookies and second-year players that have stood out to us last week. We know that the top overall pick in the 2023 class, known as Victor Wembanyama of the San Antonio Spurs, is doing special things right now, averaging nearly 27 points and 14 rebounds per game, and is on pace to lead the league in blocks yet once again, while Brandon Miller of the Hornets and Scoot Henderson of the Trailblazers, who were selected shortly after the alien in San Antonio, seek to recover from their respective injuries, as the Thompson twins and Amen and Asar are both showing signs of improvement through their first six games, averaging career-high marks and points and assists for the Rockets and Pistons, respectively, to start the year. Not to mention the 16th overall pick from the 2023 draft class and Keontae George, who is currently constructing the finest hour of his career out in Salt Lake City and sitting among the top 10 of the league in assists with the Jazz. And you also have Jaime Jaquez Jr., who's also off to a hot start as well for the Miami Heat. The player that's really impressed me the most in this class outside of Wembanyama, who has been in a league of his own to start the year, has been Keontae George for me. Talk about Baylor Bears last week with Vijay Edgecombe. People forget Keontae George was the highest ranked recruit in the history of the program prior to them getting Vijay Edgecombe. He had some ups and downs through his first 2 years in the league. But last year, he turned the corner in a six-man role behind Isaiah Collier. Isaiah Collier has been injured and out of commission to start the season, but he's taking full advantage of being thrusted into the starting five again. And you see him being a playmaker, setting up things for the like of Lauri Markkanen for alley-oops in the pick-and-roll game alongside Walker Kessler. And Yusuf Nurkic was recently talking about Keontae George and saying from a work ethic standpoint, he reminds him a lot of a former teammate that he used to play beside in Portland by the name of Damian Lillard. And that's high praises. However, like I said, he's averaging career high numbers in points per game, assists per game. Just recently came off a 31-point outing against the Boston Celtics in a big-time win on the road at TD Garden, albeit a controversial one depending on who you ask. I really like what I've seen from him. And he was one of those guys that I talked about in 30 teams in 24 days alongside of Torrance. We were talking about the Jazz young core that I was really excited to see the most this season. And boy, is he proving it.
Yeah, I wasn't that high on what Utah has as far as young core talent. I know Keontae had his moments the last couple of years, but, you know, Utah's situation is pretty funny. You see glimpses of talent and production from guys, and then they sit them down with whatever injury in the hopes of taking some losses for a tank. Right now, I don't know which direction their season is going into. I would imagine they will get back to that at some point, but it's been nice to see him be pretty consistent to start the year off. And speaking of consistency, Jaime Jaquez, this is somebody who struggled a lot last season, his sophomore year. We know that Eric Spoelstra runs a tight ship, especially with young players, as you see what Khalil Ware's been going through during the regular season with his minutes being up and down coming off the bench. Jaquez went from playing about 29, 30 minutes a game his rookie year down to 20 last year, and he's back up to that 29 30 mark. So maybe it's a combination of regaining Eric Spoelstra's trust, Tyler Hero's injury. Doesn't matter, he's taking full advantage of his opportunity once again.
Yeah, 100%. You talking about a guy that came out of UCLA. He looks phenomenal, had a great preseason, and has done nothing but build off of that. He's attacking, playing in an incredible tempo, getting downhill, finishing around the lane. Last time I checked his numbers, he was shooting well over 60% from the floor and doing the majority of that attacking off the dribble. I think he's been off to a fantastic start and something that was a must considering the way his sophomore season went, where he dealt with some injuries and was struggling shooting the basketball. And once he was able to return from the injuries due to the status and state of the team trying to vie for the play-in, he wasn't able to get into Eric Spoelstra's rotation. I think now he cemented his spot, at least in the early going. And if he continues to perform at the level he has through the first couple of weeks, I think the best is yet to come for him. And how about Ausar Thompson of the Detroit Pistons? I know he's still struggling from three-point land, but the one thing that I do like that I'm seeing with him, he's stepping into his shots more. He's being more confident. There were times last year watching him in the opening round series for Detroit against the New York Knicks where he looked like he didn't even want to shoot the ball sometime. Now he's willingly taking shots. He's doing great work off the ball as a cutter. You see guys like Cade Cunningham, once they get the rebound, seeking to push it up in transition and set Ausar up for easy baskets. We know what he can do on the defensive end of the floor, guarding multiple positions, much like his brother Amen does in Houston. I've been very impressed with Ausar's effort in his third season alongside of Amen in Houston, a guy that I really had high hopes for. And for those that may play fantasy basketball, I was advising, hey, pick him up. Just recently had a 25-5 outing against the Dallas Mavericks in a win. I like what I'm seeing from those guys out of this 2023 draft class. Hopefully, Brandon Miller can get healthy soon of the Charlotte Hornets and make that impact that I believe he can. But all in all, it's been some good efforts from the third year guys.
Yeah, well, you got guys like Brandon Miller, Scoot Henderson, Grady Dick, GG Jackson, Julian Strother, guys who had a lot of buzz around their name, potential and whatnot, whether that was coming into the draft or during their rookie years last year. But right now, I would say all of those guys, they're in a quite interesting position because we've been seeing that a lot of these contracts, they're not quite guaranteed as far as the extensions and getting max deals. Teams are pushing more of a hard line with that. But you mentioned just this overall class, it's still guys to mention. Cason Wallace out of OKC, Brandon Pozinski, who, I mean, they had Wiseman, they had Moody, even the situation with Kuminga, but out of all the young guys, he seemed to gain Steve Kerr's trust early on. You got Jalen Clark out there in Minnesota, Derek Lively, who's struggling, but we know that playing basketball without Luka Doncic is quite different, and his team doesn't have a point guard for his skill set. Hopefully he can bounce back. And got to give a shout out to Nick Smith Jr. He just had 25 the other night on the Lakers. He had his coming out party, a member of this draft class as well. So Wemby, the Thompsons, they're going to be the headlines, the all-stars of this draft class. But we got quite a few rotation players who at some point could make a big impact on some teams out here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And you talk about Brandon Pajemski, that's a guy that has a unique story of his own. He was a guy that started his college career at the U of I. It didn't work out for him. He hit the transfer portal, went to Santa Clara, played beside Jalen Williams, managed to go to a mid-major and make his way into the first round of the draft following his teammate Williams, who is with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I've been impressed with what I've seen from him to start the year. I've always felt like he's one of the key X factors on Golden State's roster. When he's playing well, they typically tend to play better as a collective. So I like what I'm seeing overall. And I just want to continue to watch these guys grow and see where they can take their game and how they can help elevate their teams, especially a guy like Keyontae George, who, if you haven't gotten a chance to see his game, one thing that you might want to check out on social media is this guy named Jordan Richards from Switch Cultures. He really did a great breakdown and insight showcasing just how he's elevated and evolved as a playmaker and thrusted himself into what could possibly be a fixture in the Utah Jazz lineup under Will Hardy if he continues to play at the level that he's been playing.
Yeah, and I see we talked about these third-year guys, but we got a couple of fifth-year players, fourth-year one, guys who playing great, but they haven't received their extensions. I'm talking about Cam Thomas of the Brooklyn Nets, Quentin Grimes of the Sixers, and Benedict Mathurin of the Indiana Pacers. Guys who came into this off-season training camp, regular seasons, without new deals. Different situations, but one similarity, a lot of these guys are your quintessential ISO guards of the 2000s. They strive with the ball in their hands, looking for their own shot, not necessarily looking to create for others, but they can go get a bucket. We talked about this many a times, whether it's the analytics, the European influence on the game, these guys are being devalued year by year. And I can understand to a certain extent, but the game is about a bucket. Maybe it's the situation. When you look at a guy like Cam Thomas, right? He's averaging 24 a game, but we know what the media likes to point out about him. The 40-point game, no assists. The 30-point games, no assists. The 40% field goal percentage. Now, I don't know exactly what's the number he's looking for. I believe he wants starters money, which you only got one time to play in the NBA, so you should definitely get as much money as possible. I honestly would just love to see him in a better situation. He seems to be best suited to be the sixth, seventh man off the bench. If you could get him to a team like the Bucks, or I mean, Miami always figures out a way to make these type of guys work. You take somebody like Dion Waiters back in the day. He had a lot of ups and downs in his career, but he had his best years in Miami. Quentin Grimes, he's moved around quite a few times. A lot of people thought, you know, the last year towards the end may have been a fluke, might have been some March basketball taking place. He's only come out this year averaging 18. I think he's found himself in an ideal situation for himself where he can come off the bench. You already got Maxey, Edgecombe's already risen, Jerry McCain, Paul George, but he's found his niche in that offense already. And Benedict Mathurin, I mean, he came out the gates playing like, yeah, pay me. And I think the Pacers and him have, I won't say they necessarily agreed on it, but I definitely feel like he's sitting down in the hopes of let's lose a few games to get more lottery balls. Because with the way they've been playing, even though despite their record, if they've had him throughout this course of the season, they'd have a few more W's.
Yeah, I don't dispute that at all. Benedict Mathurin was the guy out of all these guys, with the exception of Cam Thomas, that I was the most excited to see, especially with no Tyrese Halliburton in the fold due to tearing his Achilles in game 7 of the NBA Finals. I thought he had an impressive showing in the season opener that the Pacers had against Oklahoma City. He was averaging 31.7 rebounds a game and nearly 3 assists before he got hurt, and he was shooting nearly 55% from the floor. So even though that was in a 2-game sample size, or a game and a half, prior to him going down with the turf toe, I thought the best was yet to come. I don't think that it takes them as long as it did to get a win this season if he was in the lineup. Cam Thomas got a chance to watch him at the top of the week against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I don't understand the rhetoric around this guy's game. You heard Torrence talk about the name of the game is to get a bucket. You need guys like that, especially in half court settings and scenarios late in games and come playoff time. Heard him talk about how the Bucks would be a ideal landing spot for him. I would love to see that, especially knowing how that second option is still some questions around that over there. Even though Ryan Rollins, over the last week and some change, has put together an impressive stretch of basketball for them and possibly could fit that role. You know, we still got to see that on a consistent level basis. But I like Cam Thomas' game a lot, but I understand to a certain degree that it's some things that he's going to have to learn when he plays and gets his opportunity on a playoff team, if not possible contender. For instance, I was watching a game at the top of this week, and he had Rudy Gobert isolated after Gobert switched to him on a pick and roll. And he could have drove past him with no problem, but he tried to lull him to sleep and take a fadeaway three, and he bailed him out. He ended up missing it. Those are the shots that he's going to have to learn not to take. As great as he is in various situations, we know he's a tough shot maker. But that's the thing that a lot of people have a gripe with when it comes to him. But then you got to keep this in mind when you talk about Cam Thomas. He's really, outside of Michael Porter Jr., the only guy on that Brooklyn Nets roster that can create his own shot consistently. So how can you really knock him for taking some of those shots when they need him to take those shots? Because if you watch that game, you will realize very quickly when you go back and look at the film, a lot of the guys beside him, when Cam is on the bench, they struggle immensely when it comes to creating their own shot. And they were without Michael Porter in that game due to personal reasons. Quentin Grimes, I've always been a believer in him. Of course, the only thing when it came to him was consistency. I wasn't always a big fan of when the Dallas Mavericks traded him to Philly. I thought that was a guy that they should have held on to. I definitely felt like Detroit didn't give him enough of a runway after acquiring him from New York. But man, has he made the most of his opportunity as a sixth man in Philadelphia? And while Jerry McCain is soon to make his season debut this coming week, Quinn Grimes, I think that's a piece that Philadelphia is glad that they have for now. If he continues to keep doing what he's doing, I think he'll get his payday. That was a guy that I wanted the Bulls to try and target. You know, as we move away from the conversation centered around the ISO guards of today and the quest they must take to secure the bag soon, there's a noticeable trend that's becoming very evident when watching games around the league through the first couple weeks of the season. And that's teams around the NBA rolling out full court presses when in their defensive attacks at a higher rate than ever before. Something that we watched Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle utilize often during his team's run to the finals a season ago, as teams pressed on nearly 5% of possessions during the opening week of the season, jumping all the way up from 1% a decade ago, according to data from Synergy Sports, when they started tracking full court press numbers during the 08-09 season. I think one of the reasons why we're starting to see so many teams pressing more is because they know by doing so, it could cause more turnovers. And then as a result, you're forcing the ball into the hands of a non-primary creator of offense. And by stealing away 6 to 10 seconds of the shot clock, it forces the opponent to run their offense as the clock is winding down late. And sometimes you don't always get a greater shot quality when that happens. We know that the NBA is a copycat league. We know that the Pacers led the NBA a season ago in press rate during the regular season before they even unveiled it in a greater level during the playoff. We also know that against the Thunder, they did it a lot as well. So I think a lot of teams around the league want to see and test out whether or not this style can work for them. And one of those teams that's been doing it a ton is the Portland Trail Blazers. Even after they make a bucket, if you watch a game that they had against the Lakers in Los Angeles, you will see guys like Toumani Kamara hounding Austin Reeves as he brings the ball up. And then Drew Holiday is right there swarming to help. And as a result, they were able to force a turnover that led to a layup. And as of recent data, I think the Blazers are pressing about 25% of the time on their defensive possessions. And that leads the league by a wide margin. You also see teams like the Toronto Raptors and Boston Celtics doing it a lot. With teams like Torrance was talking about last week, playing deeper now than ever and in an era where depth is king, you see coaches shifting their lineups hockey style like at times in the quest to play this style, which I think is going to be a necessity in order to be effective with it.
I mean, obviously, that's the most important part of it. Teams and coaches are realizing because of the pace of the game with the three-point shooting, guys having to move a lot, laterally get up and down the court, guys are getting fatigued. So you're going to have depth anyway from that standpoint. And next thing, especially with this particular season, a lot of teams don't have point guards.
Yeah.
If you got somebody who really can't dribble, bringing the ball up consistently, why not cause some chaos and make him throw the ball, turn his back? Because, you know, that's one thing, especially with point guards and guys who handle the ball. They take pride and somebody not being able to turn them around coming up the court. I'll go back and just look at it. We don't have that many true point guards playing consistently on the court. So why not try to force these guys who are awkward with the ball at the moment, like Cooper Flagg, Amen Thompson. You can just go down a list of teams who right now don't have a true point guard and they're struggling in that regard, the Dallas Mavericks. When you mention the Pacers, they have two point guards and depth. Same with the Thunder. They have a variety of guys who can bring the ball up the court And they also have the depth and shot blockers. You need somebody that can still protect the rim on the back end, because if that press is broken, you're gonna give up an open three or a 2-on-1, 3-on-1 situation at the rim.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think that this was something that was always coming to the league. I know Daryl Morey talked about it off the record a few times when he was asked about it a decade ago in regards to what he thought the next big trend would be as the game was evolving. And he was saying that he saw teams running full court pressure more and trapping way more aggressively than they were back then. And you're starting to see more and more teams ramping it up.
Yeah, this might be a little off, but kind of reminds me of hearing the Grizzlies coach speak today about some of his substitution patterns. And he,
Kwame Cicilo,
yeah, I'm not pronouncing his name.
yeah.
He ain't won shit, but he was speaking on the intensity of the game and that intensity being needed for all 48 minutes. Now, I think maybe his disregard of star players or his star player has a little bit to do with European culture. Not trying to put one guy above the team, but this is America, buddy, and we like our superstars. And if they need to develop a rhythm to play well, then that's what you got to do. You need to sub the other guys out. But his point about the intensity of the game, I thought was very valid. You saw J.J. Redick the other night go off completely because of his team's lack of intensity or their ability to keep it up consistently. So I think between this full court press trend we got, the refs allowing teams to play a lot more physical between post All-Star break last year and going so far into this year, I think we're starting to get a little bit more variety in the games night to night. And the scoring has still been up, don't get me wrong. So overall, it's been pretty beneficial, even as a viewer.
Yeah, scoring's still up. Teams are getting to the free throw line at high rates. And I think that's been a major talking point amongst most nationally. But I don't think that this is something that should be overlooked because you see defense, not that it wasn't prioritized in a previous decade, but you can see them starting to evolve in a manner akin to what the offenses, in my opinion, were evolving in the 2010s. So you've heard our takes on the initial topics to start the show. Now let's get into the second half, starting with the event known as the NBA Cup. The annual in-season tournament that tipped off last Friday is this season marks the third straight year that the league has put on the event, as the 30 teams were randomly placed in the groups of five within their assigned conference based on their win-loss records from last year, shaping up a little something like this in the West. Where last year's Cup runner-up and the defending NBA champion Thunder will duke it out with the Timberwolves, Suns, Kings, and Jazz in Group A. And I'm gonna keep it at Group A for right now. What are your thoughts on Group A as it pertains to things out West, Torrance?
The whole idea of this being randomly picked is quite funny because you can tell by some of the groups that they have a preference for a few teams making it out. And I'm gonna start with this one. I think this is the Thunder's group to win. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm very high on the Timberwolves, but at the same time, right now they're missing Anthony Edwards out with a hamstring injury. They've been struggling a lot with their point guard position, so they haven't really gotten the ball rolling. And then you look at the rest of these teams in this group. The Phoenix Suns, not much to be said right there. The Kings, don't get me wrong, on a random night, they could explode between Zach LaVine, DeRozan, now Westbrook, and give you a competitive game. But we're basically talking about which team can go 4-0 in each group. 4-0, 3-1. I only see the Thunder. I got the Thunder winning Group A.
Yeah, it's hard not to. Last year's Cup runner-up, they the lone unbeaten team in the league as of this recording, entering the top of the week. They lost last year. It was the only thing that they really lost on. They had the best record in the regular season. They won the NBA championship, as we discussed when talking about them as the final team on 30 teams in 24 days. This was the only event that they didn't get a chance to claim, and they had a shot at it. I think they'll be looking for revenge this time around in Group A of the Western Conference. And then Minnesota is the team that I'm the most curious to see, only because of the simple fact that I think winning an event like this, if they had the opportunity to, could propel them in a lot of ways. We know who they are. We know a lot about them already, having gone to back-to-back conference finals. But I think that that's really the team that could knock them off if it was a team that was going to knock them off in Group A. Because if Anthony Edwards is able to return healthy, maybe they could be a dark horse, even as a wild card team.
Yeah, I ain't got time for the maybes and whatnot. Like, he coming back from a hamstring injury. Nobody comes back 100% from those. I'm taking the Thunder. I'm gonna pick the Thunder for you too for that group.
You ain't got a picker for me. Don't worry
That's
about me. I can make my predictions. I think Oklahoma City will win Group
Oh,
A.
thank you.
I'm just saying that I would like to see Minnesota use this event as a way to gain some momentum. I like the way Julius Randle's been playing. Jaden McDaniels been playing some great basketball recently. I think he's averaging like over 22 a game since Ant went down. Hopefully they could continue to build off their winning ways. Dante DiVincenzo has even been putting together a collective stretch of good basketball over the last few games.
They need to get a point guard. Moving on to Group B, we got the inaugural NBA Cup champions, Los Angeles Lakers. They're back. And we got the Clippers, the Dallas Mavericks, Pelicans, and the Grizzlies all in Group B. We've been seeing the Lakers, they've been playing well without LeBron James, without Luka Doncic. Shit, even Bronny's finally taking Gabe Vincent's minutes. I got the Lakers coming out of this group. You got the Mavericks with their point guard issue. The Pelicans are in basketball hell right now, and people are doing their best, the media, to just tear down the Memphis Grizzlies from the inside out, even though their fan base clearly feels different. And I want to definitely shout out the Memphis Grizzlies fans for continuing to cheer and support Ja Morant, people I've been seeing online, not letting the media shape the real narrative in the city. That city could care less about that coach. He can leave, but Ja Morant has to remain in that uniform. Back to basketball, I said I got the Los Angeles Lakers coming out of Group B.
Fun fact about the Los Angeles Lakers, they won the season series against each of their West Group B opponents a season ago. West Group B also features six former number one overall picks in the NBA draft, from LeBron James and DeAndre Ayton on the Lakers to Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis, and Cooper Flagg, even though Kyrie Irving will miss this year's NBA Cup due to injury, and Zion Williamson of the New Orleans Pelicans. The Lakers, I think they'll take this event seriously. I would love to see, as with all the groups, a team try and knock them off. I look forward to the matchup when they take on the Los Angeles Clippers.
Oh my God.
I do, because then I'm going to tell you why.
Why?
Because there
Why?
was a
Come on,
stretch,
man.
as you know, there was a stretch from December 2020 to April 2023. The Clippers had won 11 straight games against their intra-city rival.
And what
However, the
have they
Lakers have
won?
turned the tide.
And
They've
what have
turned
the
the tide.
Clipper
They
what
won
have the
six out of the
Clippers
eight.
won? What have the Clippers won?
All I'm saying, since the start of the 23-24 season, the Lakers have won six out of eight games over the last 2 years, and they won the last three meetings. I just want to see, can they keep that streak going?
Look, but let me ask you a question. What have the Clippers won?
And that's why it should be an interesting event for Clippers fans.
That's why we gonna move on to the
You got to
next group.
start with something.
They impossible. I don't deal with the impossible.
And last but not least, a quintet that features a trio of teams that made it to the playoffs last year, beside a pair of young ones who are trying to do the same this season, as the Rockets, Nuggets, Warriors, Trailblazers, and Spurs will round out things there in the West. This is the toughest group by far, and I think this is the group that's going to have the most exciting matchups to monitor over the course of the next several weeks in group play. I'm going to go with a team that happened to get to Vegas last year and fell a game short of making it to the finals, and that's the Houston Rockets. I think that with the offense that they boast right now, which is one of the best in basketball, to many people's surprise, outside of myself, that they're gonna use this event as fuel to catapult themselves not only atop of the West standings, but to try and get to that championship game that they fell short of reaching a season ago. They got a young team too, and I think this is an event that young squads look forward to. I could see Portland making shit a little interesting, especially defensively, but I
Oh
could.
man.
But
No, you can't.
I can.
Nah,
Yes, I can. See,
that's a
you know the
personal
beautiful
wish.
thing about the NBA Cup? It's always been a mystery team that's come out of nowhere to surprise us, even if they didn't win
With the
through the
Pacers,
first two seasons.
the Pacers
We
the
had the
first year.
Pacers. Pacers the first year. The second year, you had the Rockets there. Remember, when the Rockets were there, a lot of people were trying to figure out were they for real in the West. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people weren't buying them.
Yeah.
And then Oklahoma City, even though we knew that they were going to be a force to be reckoned with, we still had questions about them and their legitimacy is a championship contender.
Okay, well, when you speak about this NBA Cup thing and group play, you stated, and I know you realize, you have to play each of these teams one time. So you're giving the Blazers a chance in the group with the Houston Rockets, the Denver Nuggets, the Golden State Warriors, and the Spurs, and you think they can make it interesting.
They did
Well, you
beat Denver last week, just
know,
saying.
congratulations. And Denver's already taken an L in group play. I'm looking at the Rockets, Warriors, and Spurs. I know that Kevin Durant is someone who spoke highly of the event during the first year once it actually started to make some sense to the players and the intensity of the game started to pick up naturally. The Spurs, I know they're everybody darling team right now in the league. You got Vic, but we just saw, you know, everybody ready to overreact. He had his struggles last week. You got the Golden State Warriors. And you look at this tournament, you had LeBron James win. You had Giannis win. Signature stars of the league. I'm looking at the Golden State Warriors like, man, Steph Curry, when you gonna break through? I'm sure the league would love to have you in Las Vegas. You've won everything else in the league. Draymond is in front of a podcast mic every week, letting everybody know that he's the biggest winner in the league and he's the official standard of winning. So I would like to see them come out of this group somehow. But I'm gonna take the San Antonio Spurs to advance out of this group.
And you know what? If they were to advance out this group, it would be cool to see because maybe they could be that new young team that emerges for the third year in a row in the NBA Cup. And when you talk about Golden State, right? Keep this in mind. Remember last year, they advanced to the knockout round of the NBA Cup where they lost to the Rockets in Houston. So if I had to pick a game for people to monitor in Group C of the West, it would definitely be the November 26 contest where Houston goes to Golden State to take on the Warriors, where you got Kevin Durant returning to the place where he won back-to-back championships and finals MVPs. And that will be the final group play game for both teams, which not only will increase the stakes if both of them happen to be in the top two of the standings, but it could also be an essential game in regards to point differential should it be necessary to break a eventual tie. So those two teams are teams I would definitely have my eye on. And of course, you can't forget about the San Antonio Spurs. I'm not telling people to forget about the San Antonio Spurs because I said Portland's a dark horse. That's definitely a team that can make some noise in this event, even though they just recently had some unfortunate news come about is Dylan Harper's going to be out for an extensive period of time due to having to nurse a calf injury.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. You calling them a dark horse. They're a stealth horse. Nobody sees it but you. But you know, we'll let you have it because you great at what you do. Don't get me wrong. You're
I
ahead.
appreciate
Yeah,
that.
you get ahead sometimes, but you know, it'll be certain things that throw me off. But meanwhile, in the Eastern Conference, we got Group A. We got the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Atlanta Hawks, the Toronto Raptors, the Wizards, and the Indiana Pacers. Now we know Tyrese Halliburton is out. So this is the Cavs group to win. They've already taken a loss, unfortunately, but this is their group to win. I don't see any reason as to why they should have any struggles with these other teams. But who knows? These games are only on Friday night. So teams can prepare for that one night if they so choose to care that much.
Fun fact about Group A in the East. Out of all these teams in Group A, the Atlanta Hawks last year had the most successful run out of any, where they finished group play at 3-1 and reached the knockout stage where they knocked off the Knicks in upset fashion at MSG during the quarterfinal round before falling to the eventual cup champion Bucks in the semifinal round out in Vegas. The other four teams in Group A of the East, Cleveland, Indiana, Toronto, and Washington, they went a combined 3-13 last year in group play. I know that doesn't mean much for now. However, I say all that to say this. Even though Trae Young is down for over the next 4 weeks, you can't overlook the Atlanta Hawks. Nikhil Alexander-Walker's playing some incredible basketball. You also have Jalen Johnson, who is putting together a stellar campaign to start the year and is probably a player who, if you're not familiar with, you need to get familiar with. And I think he's going to use this NBA Cup stage as a way to ensure that you get familiar with him. I know Darius Garland is getting set to make his return very soon for the Cleveland Cavaliers. A lot of reports saying that he could be back as soon as Wednesday night in the Cavs showdown against the Philadelphia 76ers at home. But they got a lot of injuries right now. Max Strus is out still. I know Donovan Mitchell's been dealing with some injuries as well, Atlanta's had theirs, but this is a toss-up for me. I'm gonna say Hawks right now. I'm gonna say Hawks.
That tells me that you don't believe in Evan Mobley, and I don't blame you. That's what
Yeah,
I got.
Evan Mobley, I gotta see it, but I
Now,
gotta see it from that collective trust as
do you
well.
see what I've been saying about him? That's the question. Have you been seeing that?
I have, but it's still early. I'm giving guys time, man. You know,
Man,
they gotta catch their rhythm just like us, right?
I just don't understand his lack of aggressiveness night to night.
So in Group B of the East, you have a team that narrowly missed qualifying for the knockout round in last year's cup in the Pistons, seeking to do battle against the Boston Celtics, Orlando Magic, Philadelphia 76ers, and Brooklyn Nets for the right to see who emerges victoriously in this group. I know who won't win this group. I'll just say that. And it's not a diss,
It is a
but just
diss.
know, Brooklyn Nets fans, I really feel for you. My utmost and sincere condolences. With that said, I'm going with the Detroit Pistons. I'm going with the Pistons. And I know Torrence is going to give you a lot of flack for it, right? And that's cool. But Cade Cunningham, he's starting to pick it up, putting together some impressive performances in recent times. Jalen Duren putting together monster numbers. Isaiah Stewart starting to turn a corner. This could be an event for them to utilize and put themselves even further in the national discussion. I think it's going to come down to either them, the Magic, or the Sixers. I really do. But I like this group a lot. I think this is probably going to be one of the more competitive groups in the East. It's going to myriad of ways.
Unfortunately, I can agree that this group will be interesting because that's just how these things work out. But let's be real. You did this to Brooklyn Nets because they're barely a professional basketball team. So we can eliminate them from the equation. The Celtics, two up and down right now with their situation, but I think at some point they'll figure out which direction they want to take their season in. I'll say that. The Orlando Magic, same problem as last year so far this season. Can't shoot, still struggling to shoot the ball. But I know that you love that team and their development, so you have quite a bit of interest in seeing them progress. Now, the Pistons, this was obviously going to be your pick. You're very high on Cade Cunningham. You feel like that he has a chance to be an MVP level player in this league, signature shoe athlete. I said before the year, this could be the year he takes the crown as the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. Well, I said that, and Tyrese Maxey obviously must have heard it because he's been by far and away the best point guard in the Eastern Conference so far this season. And with the run that he's on right now, I got to give the Sixers this group. I don't think there's a player in this group better than Tyrese Maxey right now. Now, if we get towards the end and it just shakes up that we get like a Pistons Sixers game, oh, I'm locked in. I'm locked in all the way because I want to see that point guard matchup with two guys who are trying to put points on the board aggressively. I'm going with the Sixers. They still got Joel Embiid for at least a few of these games. I'm going with the Sixers.
Yeah, and Vijay Ashcombe is the hottest rookie in the game right now, too. So they got a lot of momentum. I don't dispute that. I would love to see the Sixers make some noise, especially when this is a team that a lot of people have doubted. And I'm not going to say that they weren't justified in doubting them, considering the track record from a health standpoint. But I believe no matter how this group shakes out, that more than likely, this is where the wild card in the Eastern Conference will come from, this group right here. This group is going to get two teams in more than likely, especially when you consider the fact that those games, when they play in Brooklyn, they probably going to be amped up for those, looking like, well, hey, that's a win. You know, guys look at the schedule in the league. You know they do. When they see a team that they supposed to beat, unless if they got some other outside distractions going on, which could happen, they'd be like, hey,
You know what
we
I'm
know we
hearing?
getting them.
You know what I'm hearing right now? I'm hearing that you know that the Sixers are going to win this group, but you love the Pistons and the Magic so much that you're going to still throw them into the knockout round. You ain't said nothing about a wild card yet.
Anyway, in Group C of the Eastern Conference, you had a defending NBA Cup champion, Milwaukee Bucks, who are going to try and see if they can repeat by squaring off against their Central Division rivals in the Bulls, including the New York Knicks, Charlotte Hornets, and the Heat. I think this is a 2 to 3 team race in Group C, but I'm
Better
going
than
to just
Group
say
B.
this. That's debatable, but I'll say this. If you are a Chicago Bulls fan, you should want your team to win this event and win this group. And I'm going to tell you why. You are auditioning right now for the attention of the league. You're off to a 5-1 start. You went 5-0 for the first time since the 96-97 season. Everyone's watching you. They see the pace and the style of play that you have incorporated into your attack with Josh Giddey leading the way under head coach Billy Donovan. You have cap space going into next summer. You want to make some noise? As a young group, this is the place and the stage to do it. Knock off some of these opponents. You've already had success against one who struggles to keep up with you when you seek to push the pace over the course of 48 minutes. Even with a new head coach that doesn't seek to just rely upon his starting five the way his predecessor did. So when I look at this group, that's the team that should really have something to prove the most in it. Do I think they come out? I mean, they was close a year ago. I'm gonna say, yeah, they do. I'm gonna actually go with the Bulls. I can't believe this shit, but I'm gonna go with them to win Group C.
Yeah, I'm taking the Milwaukee Bucks. All right now, Giannis the best player in the league. I don't know how he keeping his level of production up, putting up 30, 15, 8, whatever. He going crazy right now, like absolutely on a tear. They won this event last year. I'm gonna give them the respect. Somebody gotta knock them off for me to take that away from them. I'm still going with the Bucks.
You think that they're gonna become the first champion in Cup history to repeat?
Okay, well, since you want to get to that part of it, I'll say this. I got the Thunder and the Bucks in a rematch for the NBA Cup final this year, and I got the Thunder winning. The
Okay.
Thunder winning the NBA Cup this season.
I haven't thought that far. I won't lie to you. I think my dream NBA Cup matchup, though.
You mean the Pistons and Clippers?
No.
The Magic and
No.
Rockets?
I wouldn't mind seeing Magic and Rockets. I want to see these young teams utilize this event the way it's supposed to be utilized, man. I really do. I wouldn't mind seeing Magic Rockets. I wouldn't mind seeing Pistons Rockets. I wouldn't even mind seeing the Thunder against one of those squads. I would love to see the Sixers get there if they could. I think it would do wonders for a guy like Joel Embiid, personally. We saw Damian Lillard win an NBA Cup last year beside Giannis. I think that this is an event that people, or especially players around the league, need to take a sense of pride in, and I think they are. I really do.
Yeah, I think the players are starting to like the event. Like I said, after the first year, you heard guys like Kevin Durant, like, man, you know what? It's actually cool. They got a different little feel out there. The idea of guys making more money is a cool thing. I would say the first 2 years have been pretty successful. I think year one had a little bit more buzz. Obviously, it was the Lakers and LeBron James in the finals. You could argue that made Tyrese Halliburton a star. As you said last season, I know we were advocating for the league to push a few teams into the national spotlight. And one of those teams happened to be the Oklahoma City Thunder, who eventually became the NBA champions as well. So overall, I like the event. I think you mentioned this to me that the league must be listening to our podcast because we mentioned that these games should be the Friday night game, and that's what they've done this year. And you pointed out the fact that the last week is that Thanksgiving Black Friday week where we'll get games, I believe, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Yeah, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Yeah, to close it out. Now, I still like the Friday thing, but seeing that the interest in this event is growing, and I think in sports especially, you kind of want to centralize things like this. I would just kind of just make this the November schedule almost. Honestly, just take a 2-3 week block and just night after night, every other night, however you got to do it, and just do straight group play NBA Cup games. Just that way, fans aren't thrown off by we just had regular games Monday and Wednesday, and now the courts changed on Friday. I think it'll be pretty cool to almost get just that tournament feel for a few weeks in the league right at the beginning before the Christmas Day games come. Just kind of give November that special feel. Like you said, Black Friday, that might be a great night to have the final.
I understand where you're coming from. I mean, it's only year three. The cup is still in its infancy stages. I think it's getting better each and every year. And I understand when you talk about having a tournament feel on a nightly basis, because if you think about the month of November just in basketball, period, I don't care if you're looking at the high school level or the collegiate level and the professional level, it's a lot always going on, especially in high school and college. You have a lot of Thanksgiving holiday tournaments. You know, we talk about college basketball, you have the Maui Invitational. You have the event that goes on at the Bahamas that's been a popular event over the last decade and beyond. where you had the top teams in the country. Having NBA Cup games on a nightly basis is something that I wouldn't mind seeing at all, especially when I look at the fact that we're in year one of an 11-year deal with new media partners, and it will add to the excitement and intrigue. And I think you could create a whole bunch of buzz and storylines around it. So I do think that over time it's getting better. And as someone that actually went to a Black Friday NBA Cup game a season ago, I actually enjoyed the experience. This is an event that I hope NBA fans, regardless of their age range or the demo that they fall in, could find a way to get into and rally around, because I think it's great. It gives teams something else to strive for outside of just the ultimate prize itself and the Larry O'Brien trophy. And I think LeBron and the Lakers winning in year one, combined with Giannis and the Bucks winning in year two, has brought some prestige and cachet to the event itself. Because if I'm a young player and I'm looking at the bios and resumes of those guys and I see that NBA Cup there, I'm kind of like, well, hey, I want one of those too.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned the coming prestige, and they got the money too, man. We know where this money coming from for this event, man. It's sponsored by Emirates. You know, however, we gotta launder the money into the league. You know, the money's there. Guys are making good money from the event. I'm sure that at some point the final will move from Vegas to Riyadh or many different locations. So that'll be pretty cool to have. I'm pro Cub. I remain pro Cub. I'm looking forward to it this season, especially when it gets to the knockout round, when we can pretty much put all eyes on those games in that event.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you bring up the knockout round, because once you get there, that's when you start to realize, okay, it's getting real now. And you could tell because the play elevates. Just watching those knockout round games a season ago, the atmosphere felt much different compared to the group play finale game that I went to. But moving along from the NBA Cup conversation into talking on all things exclusively regarding the team that resides in the city we're recording from, with six championships and the Chicago Bulls, as part of a special segment here on the New 24, known as the Bull Market Index. Let's get right into it. So, as you heard me state earlier when talking about the NBA Cup, the Bulls managed to capture wins in each contest through their first five games to get off to a 5-0 start for the first time dating back to the 96-97 season under head coach Billy Donovan, prior to recently splitting their home and home series with the New York Knicks last weekend, with Josh Giddey leading what's been a collective charge beside their veteran all-star center Nikola Vucevic, Ayo Dosunmu, Matis Buzelis, and Trey Jones. And Chicago currently has six players averaging double figures in points to open up the year and enters the week ranking among the top 10 or better among all NBA teams in offensive rating, net rating, assist, and rebound percentage, as well as pace, with marquee matchups coming up against their Central Division rivals Milwaukee and Cleveland on the road prior to facing off against Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs at home at the top of next week, in addition to a four-game road trip to follow, as the Bulls will also square off against the Pistons once again prior to heading west to face the Jazz, Blazers, and Nuggets later on this month. They proved us wrong. We didn't think that they were going to win their first three games. To their credit, they did, albeit against some teams that last year either made it to the playoffs or were involved in a play-in in the Pistons, the Magic, and the Hawks. I like the fact that they're getting it done as a collective, spreading the wealth, ball movement. It's been cool to see those guys come together and Josh Giddey evolve in his second season with the franchise as a playmaker, being more confident, shooting three-point jump shot alongside Amadis Bouzelis, who is slowly but surely starting to come into his own. I think Ayo Dosunmu has given them some impressive minutes off the bench, picking up right where he left off in the preseason with his play and been a big spark in the absence of Kobe White. You even see Kevin Huerter making some plays defensively, knocking down catch-and-shoot looks. I think that they were the beneficiary of a lot of cold nights that teams had from three-point land, and I know that those nights will subside, as Josh Giddey talked about, and they're going to have to learn how to win some games with their defense. I still don't think that defense is as good as what the numbers may indicate, but I give them a ton of credit for getting off to a hot start. But now the time, I think, has come for a lot of Bulls fans to just breathe a little bit. I know you want to ride that emotional high and roller coaster, but it's time to breathe a little bit and actually watch some basketball games now, because you got some big tests coming up where you can really see where you line up amongst some of the premier players across the league.
Yeah, the Bulls, when we last spoke on this team, well, I was hoping that they came out losing some games. I'm gonna be honest. But they won those games. Fair and square, clear. Doing a great job with the depth. You mentioned Ibu Zelis, Vucevic, Io, Trey Jones. Pat Williams has found a better role for himself coming off the bench. Less expectations. He can lock in more on his role. Not expected a lot, but he's maximizing it so far. My thing with the Bulls is, let's not strive for the middle. That's my big thing. Let's not strive for the middle. You off to this great start, cool, but this should be the standard. It shouldn't necessarily be something that we're all up in arms about. As good as I mentioned last year, as a Bulls fan, at bare minimum, I want a team that I can come home to at 7 p.m., cut it on, and enjoy myself for 2 hours. They've given me that so far this season, and I'm appreciative of it. They got games coming up. When you get this pod against the Milwaukee Bucks, the Cavaliers, the Spurs, and the Pistons. So this is going to be a tough 5-game stretch. Let's see. Let's see if the depth is working. Let's see if Giddey remains confident. Let's see if they can do a better job at protecting the paint, something they've gotten away with during the first 6 games. As Gabe mentioned, there are some flaws defensively that the numbers still haven't shown, but they still got time to fix them. Overall, my stance hasn't changed despite the winning record. Cool if they make the play-in, cool if they make the playoffs, but I got other aspirations for the team. But so far this season, if I'm just looking at this year, impressive.
Yeah, very impressive, especially for the eighth youngest team in the league. Like I said, to beat the teams that they've beaten thus far, you tip your cap to them, but it's time to actually watch these games because now you're going up against the best of the best that your conference has to offer, in my opinion, at least up to this point in the season. And three out of those five opponents happen to be within your division, and they possess something that, as much as some Bulls fans may not care to admit it or want to hear it, that you don't. And superstars. You got Milwaukee with Giannis Antetokounmpo. You saw what he did to the Indiana Pacers at the top of the week, hitting a fadeaway for game in the Fieldhouse. Cleveland, return of Darius Garland alongside of Donovan Mitchell. Evan Mobley, I know he's a guy that Torrence is on a lot, so am I. But those are three all-stars on the floor. You add Jared Allen. That's a quartet that you have full of all stars. So you got to show and prove yourself with those teams. And I do agree with Torrence when he says that this should be the standard. This definitely should be the standard because the last time the Bulls were 5-0 prior to the start of this season, 5-0 wasn't the standard. The standard was, is how do we find a way to go back to back, which is something that they did. And not just back-to-back championships. They was trying to get back-to-back 70-win seasons that year, if you weren't around or you don't remember. So when I look at the Bulls and their start to the year, hey, keep doing what you're doing. But defensively, you got to find a way to protect the paint. There have been far too many times I've watched this team, and they've allowed guys to get inside the lane left and right, and they tend to struggle with that. And I think that they were the beneficiary of a lot of struggles the teams had from the perimeter to start the year, and that's not going to last. And you got to wonder, how's your team going to find a way to manufacture wins when shots aren't always falling? Because if you look at the 3-point field goal percentage of the guys that I named, that's their top six leaders in scoring, they shooting the lights out from three as a group. What you going to do when those shots aren't falling? You have to find a way to close out games defensively. And you sure as hell got to do it against these squads that you're going up against, especially if you want that NBA cup, which I think they have a chance to get. And I think they're going to get up for those games like they did last year. But now find a way to put yourself in position to get one of those games in a knockout round, because it's not like the league giving you a bunch of nationally televised games anyway. So you need to be looking at this as an audition, in my opinion, if you're a member of the Chicago Bulls. And kudos to Billy Donovan. I know I said that he shouldn't have got a contract extension. I'm not trying to say that I was wrong in my assessment, but at the same time, he has these guys buying into his system, and I will give him credit for that.
Guys are definitely buying into the system and it's bearing results right now. You mentioned the lights out shooting. Got to give credit to Josh Giddey and Billy Donovan for consistently creating good shots offensively. And when Kobe White comes back, now you're going to have somebody who can create for himself in isolation consistently to add another dynamic to this offense. So, as you said, this is an audition for this team nationally. I just heard Gilbert Arenas speaking on them. I saw Dirk speaking on them on Amazon. Nobody ever speaks about the Bulls nationally. Getting a little buzz right now, so let's see if we can maintain it.
And so I add one more thing before we move on. Enough with the Kobe White trade talk. If anything, if you want to see this team try and put themselves above play-in status, you're going to need him in the mix. I think he could be very helpful for this group. I've seen far too many proposals to try and trade him. I'm not saying that he's untouchable, but just pump the brakes a little bit, Bulls Nation. That's all I ask. But as always, there's a bevy of games that you can catch across the NBA's national television schedule, starting with the evening doubleheader on Wednesday that you can catch on the Worldwide Leader, where the T-Wolves and Knicks will square off against each other at MSG, and the opening bout is 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central Time, prior to Wemby and the Spurs taking on Luka Doncic and the Lakers in the nightcap out in Los Angeles, while Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers travel to the desert to pay Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns a visit in a lone game on Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central on NBA TV, prior to the return of NBA Cup action on Friday night as Kevin Durant gets his first taste of the I-10 rivalry with the Houston Rockets going against the Spurs out in San Antonio, followed by another Western Conference tilt between the Warriors and Nuggets taking place in the Rocky Mountains. A doubleheader you can catch on Amazon Prime, as you can check your local listings for those game times. My games of the week, I got quite a few, Torrance. I'm gonna start off on Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central Time on League Pass. You can catch Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and VJ Edgecombe of the Sixers going up against the Cleveland Cavaliers in a game that potentially could mark the return of Darius Garland. This is a back-to-back set for Philadelphia. We don't know for sure if Joel Embiid is going to be in it, but even if he's not, with the way that the Philadelphia 76ers have been playing, I think this is going to make for an intriguing showdown and contest. And of course, you got the Spurs and the Lakers at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central Time on ESPN. Another game that I have my eye on, of course, outside of Houston and San Antonio on Friday night, is the Bulls and the Bucks at the Fiserv Forum. 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central Time. I think this is the time that you really got to start paying attention to the Bulls just to see what they're made of. Like we talked about in the Bull Market Index segment, against one of the top teams in the league, a division rival. Can they find a way to go on the road and shut them down? And then on Saturday, you got the rematch between Zion and Wemby, New Orleans at San Antonio. Think that'll be a fun one. Of course, you got Chicago at Cleveland. And then on Sunday, very interesting game between the Rockets and the Bucks. Afternoon matinee showdown. And then you got Detroit at Philadelphia later on that evening. So those are the games that I'll be watching. It's a lot. I'm really be doing a lot of surfing around, but those are the games that have caught my eye as I look at the schedule.
Yeah, I pretty much got those games. I got Golden State, Denver, Bulls, Bucks, Rockets, Spurs, Rockets, Bucks on Sunday. It's a very good week of basketball. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's been a good season so far.
Yeah, I might have to take a trip out to Milwaukee on Sunday.
I
I'm gonna
thought
check
about
those prices. Yeah, I've been thinking about it since I saw it last week show up when looking at the schedule. I'm like, damn, I'm like, I might need to take that Amtrak trip if possible to get down to Milwaukee, Wisconsin and check out those games, man. Well, that concludes this edition of the New 24. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard throughout the first 37 episodes, including this one, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating, letting us know what you love about it across the platforms you use to listen to all your favorite podcasts. If we can't thank you enough for all of your support, or just send us an email informing us of your thoughts on it directly at tntfpod@gmail.com. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platforms for the New 24 across Instagram and X at @TNTF_ to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows and episodes, including on all of the latest currently trending around the NBA today. Don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feed, where you can also check out our series, such as Faces of the League, including our most recent one, 30 Teams in 24 Days, that you heard Torrance talk about early on the show, at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Definitely continue to stay in tune with us to get everything you need. We'll be back next week to continue keeping you tapped in on all things across the league. Once again, for myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, Thanks for tuning in, as we hope that you enjoy the rest of your week. Be safe, and as always, peace.